Dr. Van Ness for two semesters of Greek and a semester of Old Testament. And I usually come out of his classes thoroughly edified. And if any of you had him, you know what I'm talking about. And if any of you haven't, you will shortly. And I'd like you all to welcome him. Thank you very much.
Corey, I need to do anything. I am what I am. Okay, good. It is an honor and privilege to address you, to have been made into a movie, and all those. Yeah, please, no R-rated movies. It says right here. I don't remember what the poster was rated. Yeah, we made it. There we go. Very good. He does the same thing in class. That's right. And if you haven't seen the whole Facebook part that these guys put together, you ought to check that out as well. But it is, I think it was a good thing, good idea to say, with some fun, humor to it, celebration of manhood, or maybe even said celebration of testosterone. Yeah, there you go. Which some might take as a denigration of estrogen, but by no means. The best thing that males can do for the females is to grow up into manhood. There's too much boyishness around in those who should be more mature. So, when I thought about this, I thought, boy, this is a big topic and a lot of good things I think could be talked about. So, what to do? I told some of the guys that I was thinking about talking on men in skirts, the failure of manhood in the book of Judges, because I think there's a lot there. But I thought, you know, one of the dangers is to try to do too much in a short amount of time. And I probably got a short amount of time. I mean, I could stay here forever, but probably got a short amount of time with people actually staying here. So I thought, there's a lot of biblical basis to a number of things, but in essence, I'm going to skip right to an application section and just talk about a number of things, what it means to be a man, what it means to grow up into manhood. And so let me start just by saying, I meant to say this earlier, I came across this Garrison Keillor quote. He said, manhood was once seen as an opportunity for achievement, but now seems like a problem to overcome. That's one reason it was a good thing to have a celebration of this. But I want to start with, I know that there have been a number of people, or at least some, who have come through the union community, speaking to the men and different things about good things. Step up the plate, be a man, grow up, all these kind of things, probably better than what I'm going to say tonight. But one point that has been stressed in some of that is, if you want to step up, if you want to grow up, be a man, if you want to assume leadership, then here's what you do, get married. So I just want to say first off tonight, I disagree. Marriage is the last thing some of you guys need to be thinking about right now. Some of you, and I don't have anybody in mind, you can just apply it as it goes, you just need to grow up first. So the thing is not, hey, let's just get married. I think I understand, and if I understand them correctly, I appreciate what they're trying to say, which I think is you need to be thinking about preparing yourself for marriage. You don't need to be thinking about the kind of the friends set, where you just kind of roll along, whatever, and bumble through life, never committing yourself to a woman, whatever else. There's a call to singleness, but most of us are going to get married. You need to prepare yourself for that. Yes. But we must not assume that you're ready right now. In fact, if you're not currently turning your classwork in on time, getting your work done, being faithful with your comparatively light responsibilities as a single student, then you're not ready to even think about marriage. You've got to be faithful with where you are before you're ready to move on to another level, to a significant another level of responsibility as far as marriage or things like that. So the deal now may be to move Halo down your list of priorities in order to begin thinking about what sort of vocation you'll pursue, how you're going to pay your bills, how you're going to take responsibility for yourself, what you're going to do with yourself, and these kind of things. And that's countercultural, because our culture is infatuated with youthfulness. It's the thing. You can see it everywhere. The glory is in youth. That's the thing. And you get pushed. Stay young. Make the most of this. Now, the fact is you should make the most of every era of your life. But the idea out there is, man, this is it. College is playtime. Make the most of it, because after this, the whole home world of adulthood, unless you can string it out somehow. It's actually embarrassing to see how some colleges promote themselves. I haven't seen this from Union yet, and I hope I don't. If I do, I'll protest. But things like, you get whatever picture, and there was, I should have brought this real one that said basically, look how great it is, you can have fun, and great time with this, and good time with friends, and along the way, studying will get done. That's bull. That's the reason along the way for too many people studying doesn't get done and you go home. That's not the thing. We're not made to play. Now, play has its place, but you were created to work. I'm getting ahead of myself. But we have to overcome this call to perpetual immaturity, perpetual youth. We have to resist that. It is a siren song. That's an allusion to classical literature. You may have to look it up. But we have to resist that. It is a false thing trying to pull us in and say, no, that's a lie. In fact, it's a fairly modern lie. It wasn't even the deal in days past. In days past, it was considered that your goal was to seek to grow up and to really become an adult. But now we're encouraged to think, no, don't hurry that. I tell my boys, I am working to make you men. Not stay boys as long as you can or else. I'm working to make you men. So I asked him around the dinner table tonight. I said, I'm going to talk to some of these guys at Union about manhood. What do you think it is that makes you a man? Partially what I'm doing is I'm trying to find out how good a job I've done so far in teaching them. They had some intentionally goofy statements. And so I told them that overcoming goofiness was one of the things I was going to mention tonight. But one of them said, to protect women and children. I said, absolutely. That's it. And then, I forget the other one. Something else that's in my notes somewhere, so maybe we'll hit it along the way. But I want to be clear with them. This is what we're doing. We're going somewhere. We're not just hanging out. Because you can remember, the one boy, the only boy who had never grew up, right? Peter Pan. You ever notice who plays Peter Pan in the movies? Traditionally, it's a woman. So if you want to pursue perpetual immaturity, then you'll probably look like a woman too. Perpetual adolescence will not lead to manliness. I tried to think of another example. And the other one that came to my mind of avoiding maturation, avoiding maturing and growing up, avoiding the effects of that, I thought of the medieval boys' choirs, where in order to keep them having those high voices, they castrated them. Perpetual adolescence is always emasculating. We got to grow up. We got to move in this direction. This is what we're to do. So, manhood doesn't just happen. There was a sense in certain cultures where it might, where it's encouraged, but it's not encouraged now. And you can see that. You see plenty of males who are physically mature, but not mature in any other way. So how do we pursue that? Some just basic things. What do we do? Well, I'll throw out a few. Here's one. To take responsibility. And the other side of that, these are really just two things, two sides of the same thing. Take responsibility and reject passivity. That is, reject being passive. Manhood, according to the Bible, is fundamentally about responsibility. Now, I'm just taking it as a given. Everybody knows we were terribly PC, but non-PC by just starting this meeting, okay? So I'm not even worried about that now. Manhood is fundamentally about taking responsibility, and we must embrace that. Again, with the whole thing about our modern invention, really, of adolescence. You know that that wasn't even on the radar screen until about 1950s. At that time, there was children and there were adults, and that's where you were going. But our creation of this in-between time when you should have some of the liberties of adulthood, but none of the responsibilities, this encourages us just to sort of float along, maybe just get by in college, not really work hard, just be a goof off, do whatever we want with girls, and not take any responsibility. This is dangerous. And we need to shake off these doldrums. We need to throw that away. And we need to learn to get serious. Now, I like to laugh. I like to tell jokes, maybe not particularly good ones. Not everybody rises to the level of appreciation of puns. And those are good things, but that can't be what defines you. That can't be the only thing you do. If you're not able to get serious about life, you're certainly not ready to even talk about a serious relationship with a woman. It's actually when there is a weightiness in your core that you really have the opportunity and the privilege then to engage in the playfulness side of things too. When I was in Scotland, there were a number of good guys who were there studying at the same time I was. And we would get together at various times, and we began a conversation that we talked about the man of gravitas. What is that? You know, the Latin word, weightiness. One election cycle came around while we were there, and so every once in a while, that's the only place I know of in our culture where that word gets mentioned. But it means weightiness, certain bearing, dignity. The man of gravitas is not one who cannot joke. It's the one who can do that. But you know there's a weightiness to what he says. There's an opinion there that matters. There's some proven character and these kind of things. And we must establish that. If we're not moving that way, then we're not maturing. And we then don't need to jeopardize any young woman by even considering talking to her about serious relationship. But how do you do this? What are some things? Here are just a few more, I think, just practical points about pursuing this. Learning to take responsibility, because you all know that. It's just doing it that's the thing. So here's one. Do your work. It is wimpy to fail to do your assignments in class. That's just basic bare bones stuff, right? I challenge your manhood right here, right now. If you are not, on a regular basis, getting your work done and turning it in. Now, there are things that happen and whatever, but just the basic picture. I mean, we want to take on responsibility of leading a family or leading something in a job and can't do an assignment and turn it in. It starts with the small things. If we are faithful in little, we will be faithful in much. That's what we need to do. Just work on doing your work, taking seriously your current obligations. Learn and discipline yourself to get your school assignments done, or if you have a job, making sure it's done, that you're there on time, that you do your work. Just basic kind of things. Getting done what you're supposed to get done. We either downplay masculinity, you know, well, we're not worried about that or whatever. Or if we do talk about it, it becomes something pretty abstract. Just kind of brouhaha, kind of whatever. And there's a place for that, actually. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's when it's rooted in then really everyday kind of things. Like, do your work. Get your work done. Here's another one. Own your failures. This is there's a temptation in men and women both here, but it seems to me to be especially a thing for men. It's at least especially heinous for men because we're supposed to take leadership. And refusing to own our failures, playing the blame game, then cuts right across what it is we're supposed to be doing. That is an abandonment of manhood. That's the reason we even have the phrase, unless it's died out entirely now, take it like a man. Come on, be a man, step up, say, I didn't get this assignment done, I'm a day late, here it is, whatever penalty there is. Or, I didn't get it done. If you will take something late, I'll have it to you by this time, or whatever else. There it is. Now, I've had guys here do that. And when that happens, when there's an only of it saying this was wrong, it's my failure, whatever penalty there is, then in my head I say, he's on the way towards manhood. But there's always that temptation, right, to kind of shift the blame. Even here, especially, to kind of give a religious spin to it. Well, I was close to accomplishing this. My roommate, though, was in a real crisis. I stayed up with him all night through, labored with him in prayer. And he made it through, and so I don't have your assignment ready. Now, I haven't heard that exactly. I played it up a little bit, but I've heard variations of it. And my answer is, I am really glad you cared for your roommate like that. That's great. Your assignment is still late. You're still in trouble, whatever penalty goes, or failure, whatever it is. Because you should have had it done before the night before. We can't do these spin things. We got to own our failures. This is what fails to happen in the first sin. In the fall of Adam and Eve, when the Lord shows up, Adam, right? The first one he calls to the carpet. Not the first one who eats, but the first one called to answer. And he says, the woman made me do it. And the woman says, the snake made me do it. And the snake didn't have a leg to stand on. But just this passing down the line here. But it starts with Adam. It's failure to say, it's on me. I did it. And again, I really am, I'm intentionally trying to focus on small things. What are those first steps? And this is it. Just to say, man, this is it. And boy, we're so messed up with sin. So here's the next thing that comes to my mind in those kind of situations. I'm in a situation where I got to own up to my own failure. And I know whoever I'm interacting with knows that that is not only a right thing, but also a manly thing to do. And so I go to own my failure. Halfway want them to go, aren't you impressed with me? Don't you see how manly I am? So won't you just relinquish any sort of penalty or anything like that? That's not really still owning my failure. That's now trying to con my way out again instead of just saying, here it is. This is the case. This is the truth. I'll face up to it. That's part of taking responsibility and growing up. Here's the third one. Expect to work. I said a minute ago, do your work. But here, expect to work. It still surprises me how many people see work as a bad thing. It's not. The whole live for the weekend kind of thing. That's bad. God did not make you for laziness. God made us for work. Before the fall, when Adam and Eve are in the garden, they have work to do. God assigns Adam work. So if we want to take responsibility, if we want to grow up into men, we have to expect to work. We have to reject laziness. And again, I think this is a particular temptation for men. It doesn't take much observation. Maybe you've already seen it, or if you just kind of kick back and watch the culture. The basic description is men are lazy. Look at the sitcoms. Not very long, but just notice them for a moment. Isn't that the picture? A thoughtful, intelligent woman. A slob, jerk of a man. She gets things done. Has to put up with him. He's lazy. He's trying not to do this. He doesn't want to deal with the kids. He wants to go off and do his play, whatever it is, whether it's, sports or whatever, He wants to go do that. That's the caricature because there's some truth to it. This is where we're bent. This is where we will fall if we're not careful. We need, then, to see that laziness is not just a mere foible. It's not, something just to kind of joke about. We need to see laziness as damnable sin. As a dangerous cancer that will eat away at your soul. We've got to overcome that. And see, work is ennobling. Work is good. This is what God gave us to do. And actually, this is another problem with men as they get going along. If they don't have a task for them, then they get into all kind of trouble. God made us that way. We're looking for something to do and something to accomplish. And so we need to realize that. Now, it's true that workaholism, I know it's not really a word, but that's the only word we use for it, I don't know. That can be a problem for men too. Well, what about the guy? Yeah, he says work's a good thing. So he works all the time, and later on he has a family, he doesn't have any time for his family. Yeah, that's a problem. I just don't think it's the major problem anymore. All the bad guys in the 80s and 90s movies were workaholics. So everybody now knows, oh, don't want to do that. We got to take time to smell the roses. So now as I interact with you and your colleagues, I don't do a lot of trying to help people not to be workaholics. I talk about that with the girls, but not with the guys. Usually it's more along the lines of, hey, I mean, I got to have a social life. My answer, and some of you may have already heard this, one-to-one, is, no, you don't. You really don't. It wouldn't hurt you one bit to spend a weekend shut up with your books to get a job done. Wouldn't hurt you at all. Now, if you'd lived your whole life that way, yes, that's a problem, but you're not going to do that. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about you spending your whole life playing and not getting the task done. We're made to get something done. Which leads me to another thing. Well, let me just say, we need to see work as a good thing then and all that. And if you say, well, I don't know if I see work that way right now, then here's just my honest, blunt response. Then repent. Because this is the biblical view. And if you don't hold it, you're not thinking biblically. This is what God tells us. Check out Hebrews. Those of you in my Old Testament survey class just did a little project reading several of those verses in Proverbs about what God says about laziness. He's really harsh about it. Don't go there. We need to get a different idea. And then something related to this, and this expect to work and don't live to play, don't then see work as an intrusion. I guess I'm going to have to do this work so that I can then have a right to play here. No. It's an ebb and flow in life, but see work as something good that God has given you to do, some contribution to be made in this world, and then play will be along the way. I love play. But it works and makes good sense as part of also embracing work as a good and noble thing. So another piece of that then, still this work thing, is that you guys, if you're going to grow up into men and do it well, and if work is a good thing and part of what God made you to do, you need to be right now, very intentionally, very seriously, seeking to find out what specific work did God make you to do? What is that task for which you were created? You need to know that. One of the real problems for guys in our setting is going through college, particularly getting to the end of college, and maybe then finding themselves where they're thinking about marriage or serious relationships, and they don't know what they're here to do. I do spend a lot of time with guys, men, middle-aged men even, who don't really know what they're here to do. You're not going to have purpose in life. You're not going to have direction in life unless you get a sense of that. Now, I don't mean a full-out blueprint. God throws curves at us and all kind of things. But you need to have a basic idea. How do you get that? Diagram the book of Romans? Well, that would be a good task. But that's not going to give you the direct answer. Because this is something that is individual and personal. You find that as you do study the Scripture, as you seek God, and as you seek advice from godly leaders, and seeing where things are, and seeing what it is you might do, because this is a real problem. We talk about, or at least we used to, a man taking a wife. But to play off of that, you got to know where you're going before you can ever know where you're taking her. We're really probably not ready to seriously entertain marriage until you know where you're going. What's the direction in life? As at my church we talk to, as a young man talks to one of the pastors about possible marriage, that's one of the questions. Where are you going? If you want to ask a young lady, to connect her life to yours, to bind herself with you, and therefore to trust you and to follow you, you got to know where you're going. So you need to think about that. That's a challenge. It's hard. I wrestled hard and long with that myself, which seems odd to me now. It's so clear. It's like, this is that for which I'm created. And that's a great feeling. But it's not easy to come across, but you must now begin thinking about that, praying about that, seeking wisdom for that. Some of you probably already have a pretty clear sense of that. Others, you probably say, man, I don't have a clue. But wherever you are, begin seeking that so you can know what it is God made you to do. Then the last one on this part, as far as take responsibility, don't be passive, is reject the temptation to whine and complain. My boys would say that what I tell them is, one of the wimpiest things you could ever do is to whine. It just drives me nuts. Whether it's me doing it, or my boys, or a student in class. Now, I don't mean don't be honest with one another about your struggles and your fears and your hurts. Yes, that's not whining. That's when you're saying to somebody, man, I'm hurting here, and I got to do something about it, or I'm struggling. Man, this temptation, this sin, is just kicking me around. I need help. That's not whining. You know the difference of what whining is. It's usually a little higher pitched, which should already tell you there's a problem. Well, it's just so hard. Sometimes, whether it's me in the mirror or some of the guys, I want to take somebody and shake him and say, stop it. Stop it now. Say, I'm struggling, I could use some help, or something else, but this whining, complaining, but this is the passive way. This is a way of stepping out of what we should be. It's a way of really the blame game again. It's all these things out here that make it so bad. It's the conversation, and I've said this in various places, that comes up about this time of the semester when you say, I've got it real bad. I've got 3 tests and 2 papers this week. To which somebody responds, well, I got 4 tests and 5 papers. And you end up in this argument that nobody really says what's going on, but it's all a thing about who has it worst or worse. Somebody just needs to, again, knock both people down and say, grow up. Stop it. Quit acting like a bunch of girls. I know it's not PC, but that's what needs to be said. Quit that. And instead say, if we're supposed to be leaders, if we're supposed to assume responsibility, then when you're in a difficult situation, do something about it. Don't complain. Doing something about it may be going to people for help. It may be admitting your weakness to others. It may be all kind of vulnerable kind of things. But it's not whining. It's doing something about it. Part of manhood is taking the initiative, not then sniping and complaining. All these things that I'm talking about there, as we begin to do those, that's what produces leadership. And leadership is part of what it means to be a man. In whatever realm it is. But it's these things that prepare us for leadership. Not just all of a sudden saying, I'm going to lead. It's these small steps. But here's another thing, another big picture thing. Take responsibility. Another one, embrace commitment. Again, our culture is not very favorable towards commitment. You probably still get things in the mail wanting you to sign up for something, and one of the big selling points is no commitment membership. Isn't that a good thing? You can be a part and make no commitments. Well, now that's the way that marriage is advertised. Hey, no commitment membership. Let's come on in or whatever else. And other kind of relationships. The world around us tells us, hey, you know where life is found? Life is found in having no constraints, no obligations, no responsibilities, no commitments. This is fun. This is freedom. But that's a lie. What that really leads to is purposelessness. You don't have anything to do. Not purposelessness. That's what happens after the Packers defeat the Vikings. That's a whole other issue. There's also that picture, you know, the archetype of the hero, the lone wandering hero. all alone and to himself, a drifter born to walk alone, another kind of mess like that. That's not true. That's not the reality. This aversion to commitment is actually another form of cowardice. Because it's easy to live in isolation. I mean, it's lonely, but it's easy. Right now, if you want to, I don't know what you're doing, but you, if you want to, if you live here on campus, you can come out and you can see people and you can do your thing, and then you can go back to your little cubbyhole there and live in isolation. It's easy to put up a mask and put up a front and look decent. Well, I mean, act decent. Around people and then go back to your thing and really live in isolation. What's hard, what's the real work, is engaging yourself in real and committed relationships. I don't mean with the ladies necessarily. I mean in community with other people, and walk with them over a period of time where your sins are going to be more evident, where all of a sudden you have to deal with yourself a bit more. It's very easy in this stage in life to have a wrong view of yourself. When I was a student here, it was a great time. I learned a lot, grew a lot. I was going along. When I got married, all of a sudden, I saw all sorts of sin in me that I had never seen before. And my first response was, must be her fault. I mean, I was a pretty decent guy. And now I'm married and I see the selfishness and stuff. She must be causing that. Sound a lot like Adam, passing the blame. But what really was happening was, all of a sudden now, my life is right up close to another person. There wasn't really that much opportunity for selfishness to break out when I was really to myself. And so it's actually in commitment that we are forced to grow, forced to face ourselves, face our sin, grow up. And one of the ways then you do this is by being involved in the church right here and right now. You will not mature as you're supposed to if you're not significantly involved in the life of a local church. We may not think of those two things together, but we should. God has commanded you to do this, and you reject it, and you expect to grow up, right? No, you will be malformed. You will be deformed. It won't work. And it's supposed to be church, not go and get your sermon card punched on Sunday and go home, or even, ooh, get it punched on Sunday night and Wednesday night too and go home. But it is living out the faith with a certain group of people, where you are investing in their lives and they are investing in yours, where they're walking with you close enough to say, you know, you're a jerk sometimes. And for you to say, I really want to get mad at you for saying that, but I'm going to go ahead and clench my teeth and say, thanks for telling me that. This is what we need. This prepares you for growing up. This prepares you for marriage and whatever else the Lord has ahead for you. One other little thing here. I mean, you know this, but I'm just going to hit this. Commitment. You know, guys are supposed to be really bad about commitment, and so they toy with girls. They toy with their emotions. And you know the stories. You've probably heard them. I've heard them more than once about different guys who they kind of just they lead a girl along enough just to kind of keep her interest. And while they keep that fish just on the line, bring another one in just enough and another one. We call it play in the field. It's just another word for sin. That's all it is. These ladies were not made for your amusement. Commitment and learning commitment says you don't toy with them like that. You no doubt can have many friends and just talking with people and whatever else, but you know the difference. I don't know if I can define the difference, but you know it. We don't toy with them like that. But you make serious decisions, you make committed decisions, and you stick to your word. Well, another thing, the big picture thing. I said, take responsibility, embrace commitment, and then sacrifice. These are all interrelated. But sacrifice is part of what it means to be a man too. That is willingness to sacrifice. You can't get around that from Ephesians 5, if nowhere else. when he defines a husband's love for his wife, and he says to love her as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her, that's what it is. When the Bible defines leadership, which the Bible calls men to do, again, it defines it in terms of Christ, which is sacrificial leadership. This is part of what it is. This is why self-centeredness will destroy manliness. Or to put it this way, self-centeredness will shrivel your manhood. So fight against it. Learn to live not simply for yourself, but to be willing to sacrifice. Now, right away we can think of this in big terms. Like my son who said, part of what it means to be a man is to protect women and children. That's exactly right. Now, that's not very PC, but it's right. That's what it is. So we can think of that sort of thing. We can think of, you know, people dying for someone or whatever. And that's sort of considered too, I don't know, romantic or something for today. But there's something right for us to think about there. You can think of the story of the Titanic, which James Cameron destroyed in his movie. I refuse to watch it because it is simply a perversion of a really valuable and glorious story in history. Not glorious in what they did with the boat. You know, they said God Almighty himself couldn't sink this boat, and, well, we found out otherwise. But even in that, when that happened, it's there, you know, the movie sets up all this stuff about class warfare and, the goofy actor, I can't think of his name at the moment. I mean, exactly the opposite of what we're talking about here, manliness. But, you know, all this kind of stuff. But what really happened was when the boat began to go down, the cry went out just from people there, women and children first. And so men, almost all of them, there were a few exceptions, but only few. Men relinquished their seats on the lifeboats so that other women and children could come in. And story after story told of men taking their wives and their children and putting them in the boats, looking in them in the eyes, knowing that they have a good chance of surviving, but most likely he's about to drown in the icy waters, and speaking the final words to them and sending them off as the men then take their place on the boat and go down with it. That's the real story of what went on there. And as that story got out from the survivors, it's in a wave of support through the nation. The current First Lady, Mrs. Taft, then put together a movement to raise private funds to put up a monument to the men of the Titanic. I think I've got the wording of what they put on that here. Yes. The inscription was to read, "To the brave men who gave their lives that women and children might be saved." And Mrs. Taft explained her work by saying, "I am grateful to do this in gratitude to the chivalry of American manhood." There were actually some leaders in other parts of the world who talked to one another, we have a record of it, saying that would not have happened in our culture, different cultures, because the gospel had not penetrated those to show this is the way it works. That actually, the reason that idea was there goes back to the HMS Birkenhead, which was a military ship not quite a century before, but in the 1800s. It was headed to Africa with soldiers. They had their families on there as well, which seems odd to us, but wasn't so uncommon at the time. And as they're going down their way, this boat begins to sink. Chaos erupts. People run in various places until one of the officers calls the people to attention, has all the soldiers line up in their, you know, ranks and whatever, and stand at attention while the women and children are placed into the boats, and they are then let go to safety. And the men stand at attention as the boat goes down until the women and children are far enough away so that their jumping in won't cause them any danger, and then they're released. But they all stand there. They know that's their duty. That's the thing to do. Now, it's a good chance we won't face those kinds of things. But it's a useful thing to get that kind of thinking in our heads. Because those big picture things begin to shape the small picture things. What does it look like for you as a college student to live out sacrificial manhood towards others? Well, all kind of ways. all kind of little ways towards women. That is that when necessary, you put yourself in the place of danger and not her. Now, I don't mean some girl that you're interested in. I just mean women in general. It's from this that comes the whole thing of opening a door for the ladies. Allowing her to go through first through the door. All these kind of things, which to a lot of people are passé. It's a good thing to do. You say, well, some ladies don't like that today. Well, as you're here on campus, you open a door for a young lady and she's offended by it, that's just one less person to worry about as a particular candidate. You want somebody who can appreciate this. This is what we're called to. The whole thing of walking on the traffic side of the street. There's a reason to that. You put yourself between her and danger. And that's not just some high-flowing rhetoric. It just makes sense. And in spite of a lot of things in the culture, most of the young ladies will recognize and appreciate that as well. It's how God made us. In relationships, then, this is why you are to take the initiative. That very difficult first step of saying, all right, putting my cards on the table here. And you don't want to do that, right? Because you want somebody else to kind of, you know, some other girl maybe to go fish and get the information and make sure there's a yes answer of some sort before then you kind of put your cards on the table. If there are ways, noble ways of knowing as much as you can, that's all right. But there's a reason why you are supposed to initiate. You are putting yourself in danger. You're the one who has to face the thing of rejection. Why? Because you're a man. And she gets to remain in safety and say no, or no thanks, or whatever else. Or, as you begin conversation, and whatever else is going on, you know, just kind of getting to know somebody, and she says, over. I would encourage you to think along the lines of saying, she has the right to say that. And if I don't understand, I can ask why. And she says, I can't explain it, or I don't know, or I don't want to say. Fine. She gets to stay in safety. You get to run the danger. That's real small compared to drowning in the North Atlantic. But that's a small step of having, being able to live this out and live this kind of manhood. But sacrifice can be of other ways as well. Sacrificing your own desires. You need to have a sense of what it means to give yourself to a task, to go back to the thing of knowing your vocation. Giving yourself to a task and not just always indulging yourself. Of saying, you know, if I'm here to learn in Greek, that high and noble calling, if that's what I'm here to do, or whatever else it is, I just use that as an example, then it's worth giving myself to that. And if it means that there's some fun event going on at a certain time, but I know in my gut, and you know it, I mean, that would be fine. There's nothing wrong with that. It would be a good thing to do. But if I'm going to master this thing that God has brought me here to do, whether it's electrical engineering, shocking as that could be, or whatever else it is, if this is the thing God has me here to do, then I will miss out on that. And the guys will say, oh, man, you missed it. Are you going to miss it? Or whatever else. Then you think, oh, I didn't miss it. Well, then turn that and say, all right, I had an opportunity to sacrifice for the calling God has given me. This is a good thing. When if they say you missed it, and you go, no, I don't think I really cared. Well, good, it didn't hurt. But it's when it hurts that you can go, well, this is something I'm supposed to be doing. I have a task. I know what God has before me, and I'm willing to pay the price to get there. Guys, you never learn the value of paying the price to accomplish something. Our guys who have yet to grow up. This is part of the thing. We need to know that. We need to know what that's like. Because if you don't, then these are the guys who end up married and with children. And you may know these stories. I don't know. I know too many of them. And they just continue to live their lives. They don't really invest in their wives and their children because they're working and they bring home a paycheck and that's fine. But then evenings and weekends are spent doing their play. Going running off to do this and running off to do that and running off to do that. With things which in themselves may not be bad. But they not learn to deny themselves that they might fulfill their calling. Because when you get married, whatever else you know that God's called you to do, God has now called you to labor for the sanctification of this woman. To love her as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that she might be pure and spotless. That's your task. And if that means you give up your favorite sport, so be it. If it means you no longer get to watch the Packers on television, so be it. Then you can take your wife to Wisconsin like I did, and where she got to really like in the Packers, and whoa, what a glorious thing. You see, the Lord does work miracles. But you can't just be indulging yourself. You got to learn what it is to sacrifice. In big picture, those sacrifices, in the end, aren't even really sacrifices. Along the lines of what Piper talks about at various times, about you can't really sacrifice for the Lord. I mean, obviously, in one sense, you do. You turn away from something that seemed like something you really wanted, but the Lord blesses, and so it's like, man, how can I really call that a sacrifice? It's the same thing here. You want to prepare yourself to be the kind of men who, if and when the Lord gives you a wife and gives you children, you're going to be a godly husband and father, training and leading a family, and not buying into the whole thing of footloose and fancy free. I close with this story. Just this last weekend, we'd gone to the mall, which I sometimes consider part of my sacrifice. And we were there doing our shopping. We did get to go to Chick-fil-A, so blessings in the midst of things. And then we're on our way out. It's cold. It's kind of drizzly. We have six children, and two are currently less than two. So on the way out, we're realizing we got two dirty diapers. It was a great thing. And the mall's not really a good place for changing diapers. It's just not great. So, typical thing for us is to use the back of the vehicle to change diapers. So, we're going out there, tell the other boys to start loading up. My wife's got one child on this side of the, you know, the back of the vehicle, and I've got the other one on this side, and it's not dueling banjos, which probably won't mean anything to anybody, but it's dueling diapers, you know. We're just working quickly in the cold to change diapers, wiping poop up and sticking it in and, you know, getting ready to throw it away. Which really just seems gross, but it's no big deal now, man. I've had my hands on so much stuff, it just... Yeah, it's not a big deal. Fatherhood gets you over lots of things. And I go right back to eating chocolate cake. It doesn't bother me at all. So, there we are, doing this. And this talk begins to go through my head. And I'm thinking... A week ago, not quite a week ago, I was in San Diego. I was in a number of settings where I was having lunch next to Leland Ryken. We were talking about things, and he was saying something appreciative about a paper I'd just given. And I talked to this person, that person. So these, in my world, important people, prominent people, hobnobbing, you know, kind of the stuff, talking to people about writing projects and these kind of things. Now here I am in the dark, cold, drizzling rain, changing the diaper. And I thought, you know, this is what, again, in the movies and things, they say, didn't think you'd end up here, did you? All seemed great, you had a plan, now here you are, bogged down with a wife and six kids. They never say that. But I thought, man, couldn't be any further from the truth. I was glad to go there and be able to do that. But this is real. This is life. This is far more heartening and joyful to me than any of those other things. This will have far more impact in the kingdom. The work I do, that everyday, mundane, unglorious, or inglorious, whatever the correct one is, task of teaching, training, and changing diapers. That matters far more. This, if the Lord gives you wives, this is where you're headed. And working in those kind of things, in the everyday kind of ways, embracing responsibility, living out commitment, willing to sacrifice, so that your cultural engagement really is your family. We talk a lot about cultural engagement here at Union, and that's a good thing, but don't ever think what that means is making a difference in D.C. or Hollywood, or whichever way it be. If you get a chance to do that, fine, go do it. But that's not the only part of culture there is. the most significant culture you're involved in is your own home, then your own church, and living out practical dirt or other items under your fingernails, kind of godliness in the everyday sphere of life. This is where manhood's lived out. This is what it looks like. Well, let me lead us in a word of prayer. Father, thank you for these guys who want to come together and think and talk about these issues. It's not really rocket science, but it is challenging simply to live out these truths. And so, help us, by the power of your Spirit, to live out the truths of your Word. Help us to be men. Help us to reject the pull of the culture around us away from what you would call us to do. Help us to stand firm. I pray for each of these young men that you would help them to know the task that you have for them, that they might begin to get a grasp on the calling you have for them. Help them to pursue that, and then give them direction. Help them to reach out to one another to encourage and challenge, rebuke and help one another. And help them, Lord, to give themselves to specific local communities of faith where they can live out the faith and learn and grow, so that we might really walk in the paths of biblical and godly manhood, because we know that's where real life is for us. And we know that is the way we glorify you more than any other spectacular thing that people might notice. Help us to do that. In Jesus' name, amen.